Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Pack Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Good afternoon, good evening, whichever way we want to do this, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Pulse of the Pack. We have one preseason game in the books. I am Jacob Westendorf, your host, fresh off a trip to the Holy Lands in Green Bay, Wisconsin. I got back about an hour ago, went to practice today. I'll tell you some stuff. And joined with me, as always, is Jason Perrone. Jason, how are you today?
Doing well. Apparently, I'm one of only three people on earth who is not watching golf right now. So I couldn't tell you what's happening, but I can tell you that we definitely need football back when there's this much craze over golf, because there's not enough craze over other sports that should be happening on Sundays that create said craze. I'm good, but again, I'm a little out of the loop, so I couldn't tell you who's winning and who's losing.
Fair enough. Okay. We have, like I mentioned, we have one preseason game in the books. There's another one slated for Thursday night against the Pittsburgh Steelers at Lambeau Field. It'll be the last time the Packers will be at Lambeau Field until September 9th, which is 4 weeks from today, when they take on the Chicago Bears in the first regular season game of the year. The first preseason game, the Packers won, if you want to call it that, if you really want to get into semantics. They won the game. I mean, I would prefer the team win to lose, I suppose. So that was nice to see. But here we're just going to go through some of what happened and, you know, what did we see? What did we like? What didn't we like? I think it's pretty clear that the star of the show was Marquez Valdes-Scantling, one of the draft picks at receiver this year. He was phenomenal, quite honestly. He looked like the best player on the field most of the time. His speed, his combine speed certainly played onto the field, which is nice to see. He's not just a straight line sprinter, which could be the concern. He's legitimately running by corners that ran a 4.3 and a 4.4 as well. So his speed showed up. If you want to say that someone has a, quote, leg up as far as the three rookie receivers go, I think Valdes-Scantling certainly has made his mark early on, at least through one preseason game. This could be a springboard. Later in the game, Equanimeous St. Brown also made a couple of plays. There's a lot of people, myself included, that thought he was a top 100 talent going into this draft. I really liked him. I was ecstatic when the Packers drafted him. He could have some immediate value this season. A lot of Packers scribes on the Twitter sphere are talking about how he could be the other slot receiver, if you will, in a 2x2 formation. A big slot receiver, similar to the way the Packers have used Jordy Nelson in the past. That could be something that's exciting, but he made a couple plays as well. He showed up, and then Jamon Moore struggled. So of the three rookies, he has played the worst of the – or he played the worst of the three. He had a couple drops. He had a couple chances to make plays. He just didn't reel them in. And the reality is, you know, when you're in a competition like that, he's the one with the – he has the highest pedigree, if you will. He was drafted the highest. But he's made the least amount of plays, at least so far. So, Jason, three receivers specifically, Have you seen anything that you like, that you don't like? Is there one that you think you favor over the other? Who do you think has the best chance to maybe be a contributor as the season comes to a beginning here? Because the reality is, you know, the Packers are relying on one of these rookies, you would imagine, at least, to be – I mean, they have Davante Adams and Randall Cobb, both good players. Geronimo Allison appears to be pretty firmly entrenched into that starting lineup, if you will. Obviously, the tight ends and the running backs are going to take hold too. But after that, it's a lot of unknown at the receiver position. So these rookies could potentially be counted on as early as week one. So is there one that you think has – who do you think has the best chance to be that guy as the season starts?
Too early to tell on the three because we haven't seen enough in games. We can't go off of one preseason game. So obviously Marquez Valdes-Scantling got a game ball in my column right after the game. And at Cheesehead TV, he was the first game ball actually because he was the, you know, I think he was the best overall player for the Packers on the night. And I kind of joked about the comparison between Valdes-Scantling this year and Aaron Jones last year. And how Jones was like the middle receiver, or the middle running back taken between two guys that everyone wanted to talk about. Nobody was really talking about Jones. And then Aaron Jones ends up being kind of the guy. So I don't know if that'll translate to the receiver position this year. If it does, that's great. I liked what I saw from MVS, as we'll call him. And St. Brown actually came on pretty well at the end of the game. I mean, you make plays, you either make plays or you don't. I know it was against third and fourth stringers, so what can you really say about that? But at least he reeled it in. As far as Jamon Moore goes, he was at least in position and getting open. So he just has to figure out a way to reel some of these balls in. I think the expectations on him are very high because of the film that he put out from college and some of the great catches that he made during his career there. So, you know, it's going to take him a while to adjust to the pro game. But I'm not too worried about the receiver position, especially because of who's going to be throwing him the ball. It wasn't even that guy on Thursday night this past week. And you know, I don't know if we're going to get to see any of 12. Actually, from what I read, I think today we're recording this on Sunday, and he ran with the ones, he being Aaron Rodgers, ran with the ones in practice. So will we see him for a series or two on Thursday against the Steelers this week? I have no idea, but I'm not too worried about it. I think they'll be fine. I like what I see. That's kind of why I titled the show The Future is Bright, because I think these receivers are ultimately going to be pretty good when all is said and done. It's going to take them time to develop. You know, that's the deal with the rookies is that it takes them time to develop, and it's going to take a couple seasons for them to get their true legs under them. I'd have no problem with them starting right away, though. I mean, I think the height and the matchups that they provided, you know, they're getting open. They just got to catch the ball. I mean, that's step one is get open, learn the route tree, all those good things. So, again, this offense is the least of my concerns. And I think the receivers are towards the bottom of my concern list, honestly. The rookies looked okay.
Yeah, if I had to pick one, I'm going to think Equanimeous St. Brown. I mentioned I was really high on him. I think if I have to pick one, that's the one I would guess on. But, yeah, like you said, it's too early to tell. You know, Valdes-Scantling, MBS, had a big night the first night, and he might be a ghost when they play the Steelers Thursday night. So that'll be something to keep an eye on, obviously. The Packers, it's interesting that we're talking about receiver battles. I feel like we talk about this every year, you know, and it seems like we're long from the days where wide receiver three and wide receiver four were James Jones and Jordy Nelson behind Donald Driver and Greg Jennings. The Packers just haven't, because of some of the issues with their defense, they haven't really been able to restock their weapons at wide receiver. You know, the last high pick, if you will, that they took at a skill position was Davante Adams, and he was a second round pick. And that was in 2014. So it's been a few years. So that's something that, could potentially be something to watch this offseason with two first-round picks, which we will talk about those two first-round picks tonight. No, this is not a draft show because it's a season, but there's some stuff to talk about for those. Let's talk about – we talked about the receivers. Let's go to the quarterbacks. Obviously, it's another big position. It's a position battle. I'm not certain that it really is a competition, but it appears the more – could be wrong. I've always believed that the Packers didn't trade Demaryius Randall for somebody that was going to be their third string quarterback. Now, Hundley took the first snaps on Thursday against the Titans, and he looked like today at practice, from my eyes, that he was the second one in the drills. So maybe the Packers' plan is to groom DeShone Kizer for a whole year. And trust me when I say this, I know I was really high on DeShone Kizer coming into that draft. I thought he was the best quarterback in that draft that included Mitchell Trubisky and DeShone Watson and players of that nature. Now, it looks like DeShone Watson, after the one season, looks to be the best quarterback. But I still think Kizer's really talented. You saw that. But Hugh Jackson is a mess. And Mike McCarthy said today, you know, they look like they're from a different family in terms of their footwork and stuff like that. They made a mess of the kid. And it might take a while for him to develop into the player that they think he can be. Now, that being said, they both played pretty well, including, and also Tim Boyle, the fourth quarterback. All the Packers quarterbacks played well on Thursday night. There's some stuff that you could see with each of the players. I thought Brett Hundley played as well as maybe I've ever seen him. Now, it was a preseason game. That's to be certain there. But he played really well. He was confident. He was throwing into tight windows. He hit Devontae Adams for a bomb on the first series, which was nice to see. Kizer made a couple plays down the field. Tim Boyle threw a couple dart touchdowns, one to Valdes-Scantling and one to Packers fan favorite Jake Kumerow. And it's nice to see, you know, the backup quarterback position, usually I say that what I want from them is just to make the preseason entertaining. And they did that. So do I hope that any of them play in a game this season? Hell no, because that means Aaron Rodgers is not playing. So, but after the way last season, Jason, it had to be nice to see that Hundley and Kizer both look like they could have something to offer this offense as a backup quarterback. That'll be three shows in a row, Jason. Undo the mute button.
Oh, I didn't know we were transitioning in there. I didn't realize that was my cue. As far as the quarterbacks go, yeah, this has been kind of an intriguing thing that I wish we weren't focusing on, because they can't afford to keep three quarterbacks on this roster. So because of the other position groups where they're going to need extra bodies, you know, plus, we need to make room for one potential all-pro pass rusher that could be joining the team eventually. So that's even one less.
That's called foreshadowing, folks.
that's called a tease. I honestly, I will say this. I thought Brett Hundley looked a lot better than I thought he would. He made a nice play early in the game where he rolled to his left and he kind of, you know, put it in the turkey hole, as John Gruden likes to call it, to EQ St. Brown, and it was a nice throw and it was risky, but he made it, you know, made a nice play on it, kept his eyes downfield. You know, if you want to talk about how Mike McCarthy hasn't coached up a quarterback since Rodgers, I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think he still has the gift of being able to develop some of these guys, and Hundley being one of them. And, but, you know, like you said, the loot that they gave up to get Kizer, and he actually looked okay too. He made kind of a cool jumping bomb throw downfield. I think it was to Kumerow, and it was a cool looking play. I don't know how technically sound it was. It was kind of Favre-esque in its mechanics, but he's got a great arm, and they're not going to, I don't think there's any way they can't keep him on the roster, Kizer, right, based on what they gave up for him. So then what do you do with Hundley? Because the entire world knows that the Packers are probably not going to keep him, and nobody's going to offer to trade for him right now because they can just sign him later at their price versus having to part with valuable capital, draft capital, or even a player at this point. So we haven't even talked about, I mean, Boyle, you know, there was some chatter about how Hundley could be the odd man out. Boyle ends up on the practice squad and Kizer's backing up Rodgers by the time week one rolls around, or, you know, whatever they decide to do. So I think if Hundley ends up not in Green Bay this season, which is highly likely, I think he'll get scooped up pretty quickly. You'd be surprised how many teams probably would love to have him as at least backing up their starter. They might not want Hundley starting, but as a backup, I think he holds a lot of value. And that's where I think the Packers need to kind of focus their efforts in moving him, if they're going to, is, hey, here's a solid number two. Put him on film. I mean, fortunately, they're not going to play Aaron Rodgers a ton of the preseason anyway, so that's going to organically give Hundley a lot of time on film and a lot of, well, a last-ditch effort to put some good tape out there. And, again, this is another position group where it's a fun and intriguing battle to watch, but it's not the biggest concern that we have on this team. It's just a good problem to have. The Packers, they found another potential gem in Boyle that may or may not develop into something, but, you know, kudos to the scouting team and the personnel team for finding these guys that can come in and compete and do some things. I don't want to say it's Joe Callahan all over again, but, you know, I mean, we're going on how many years now of the Packers not really having to worry about the quarterback position a ton and having some prospects that they can work with and look at without being under the gun. Just look at some horrible teams out there that have quarterback issues year after year and ask them how it's worked out over the past three decades, having to figure it out season in, season out. You know, it wears on the scouting department. So Packers are in good shape here. I think the Hundley-Kaiser thing will kind of work itself out. I think it'll be Kaiser in the end, just based on what they gave up. You know, you talked about foreshadowing in my comment about the pass rusher. I think the trade with Randall kind of all but foreshadowed to me what they're probably going to do at the quarterback position.
That's interesting because at the beginning I thought, yeah, two quarterbacks was going to be the case. But the longer this goes, I wonder if they will keep a third one. I will say this. Tim Boyle is certainly more talented than Joe Callahan could ever dream of being. So can sneak him into the practice squad, keep him around as the third quarterback, or excuse me, the fourth quarterback if they keep that, both Hundley and Kaiser. So a lot to watch on the backup quarterback spot. They're going to play a lot, Jason, like you mentioned. It sounds or looked like today that Aaron Rodgers might play a little bit on Thursday. I would say that if David Bakhtiari is going to play, that is okay. If he's not, then I would call that irresponsible unless you're going to have Rodgers go out there to give the fans something, hand the ball off three times and punt, in which case I'm cool with that. Giving the fans something, but there's no need to put your all-world greatest quarterback of all time at risk if your left tackle is not going to play. Now, I've mentioned this before on the show. It's not like you can put him in a bubble and not play him if Bakhtiari were, God forbid, not available in a regular season game, but that's not the case. Bakhtiari will be available for the regular season. He may not be available Thursday night, and if he's not, I don't think Rodgers should play. So that's my opinion on that. Because of that, that means Hundley and Kaiser and Tim Boyle are all going to get a lot of looks, and I think that's okay. If you're going to have a true competition, Brian Gutekunst, one of the first things he said was he wanted a true competition at every position. I think if you look up and down this roster, it's pretty rare that you have someone who is, I mean, guys, great players like Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, guys like that are entrenched starters. But there seems to be legitimate competition. You know, a guy like Devon House was signed last year, and there was zero competition for him to be in the starting lineup. And now, you know, the Packers have Jaire Alexander. They have Josh Jackson. They have Lindsey Pipkins. They have all those younger, Josh Hawkins, younger corners. And House is far from guaranteed to make this team. So I think it's something that obviously it could be a little bit better at some spots, but I think that it looks pretty good for right now. Speaking of the rookies, both of them, Jaire Alexander didn't play, and that kind of sucked, but, you know, he's nursing a groin injury. He was back at practice today. But two guys who did play were the second-round pick, Josh Jackson, and third-round pick, Oren Burks. And I'm going to start with Jackson because I loved him. I would have picked him 14th overall if I were the general manager, and you thank your God that you pray to that I am not every single day. But Jackson had a bogus holding penalty called on him, and otherwise I thought played very well. He missed one tackle in open space that turned into an 11-yard gain. But otherwise, coverage-wise, I mean, I thought he was spot on, and he was covering legitimate receivers. The Titans have a decent receiving core in terms of guys like Tywan Taylor, Tajay Sharp. I mean, was he covering Julio Jones? No, but you can only cover the guys that are across from you. And I think he did a very good job on Thursday night. He has me very excited as somebody that should be a pretty significant contributor for the Packers this season. The other one was Oren Burks. The spotlight is kind of on him because he is Jake Ryan's quote-unquote replacement. He was probably going to play some anyways, as a dime linebacker, the coverage linebacker, if you will. And he shows up really nicely as a coverage player. You know, his size and speed combination, he's a former hybrid safety. He does well in the screen game, which has just torched the Packers since Dom Capers had been the defensive coordinator in Green Bay. And now the Packers have a guy who can kind of shut that stuff down. He looks good in coverage. He has some struggles as a run defender. And I think that that's something that probably isn't going to go away just because he's a smaller guy. And it's why, you know, Jason, we talked about last week, probably why I wouldn't be opposed to the Packers picking up a veteran linebacker to play on first and second down, similar to maybe not him specifically, like maybe not Navarro Bowman specifically, but somebody like that, just to be your run defense linebacker, if you will. Because if you play a team like the Cowboys in the playoffs, Oren Burks being little is going to be a big deal because they have the Great Wall of Dallas and they have Zeke Elliott and all that other stuff. So that's something that, you know, against your spread offenses like the Rams and the Falcons and the Eagles and teams like that, yeah, you need as much speed on the field as possible. But there are still teams that play some old-fashioned smash-mouth football, and that's where I think Oren Burks will struggle. But overall, he's fast. His sideline-to-sideline speed was very nice. And I think both rookies played well. I think you got to come away pleased with how those two guys played. Jason, that was the first guy you mentioned. So tell me about what you liked, what you saw from Oren Burks.
The speed. I like the speed that he has. You kind of hit the nail right on the head. He's got that sideline-to-sideline speed, and he's somebody who can finally chase a play down. I mean, you know, I saw the swing pass into the flat. Now, if you're a Packers fan that's followed this team for the past couple of years, preseason or not, when you see a swing pass into the flat and there's nobody else on the screen, your heart drops into your butt because you assume that this ball carrier is going to just walk into the end zone because no one's going to get there. I'm looking at you, A.J. Hawk, and insert slow linebacker who can't make the play and middle of the field and all those other Capers jokes. So I know that Burks is going to struggle with his growth and he's not going to jump in right away and be a perfect player, but I talk about intangibles a lot because I'm kind of the every fan. You know, I'm not your X's and O's guru. I look at players and kind of how they play and their attitude and kind of, you know, some of those other things that don't show up on in the stat sheet. And Oren Burks, he's got a great demeanor to play football. He wants to be out there. He wants to make plays. He was, you know, getting fired up about what he was doing. You can tell when he gets comfortable in this defense, he's going to quickly become one of the leaders of this defense over time, as long as he stays healthy and he continues to produce. So I'm not worried about the bumps that you have to go through. We're going to go through a lot of bumps this year because there's a lot of rookies that we're going to ask to play on both sides of the ball. So it's probably going to translate to a loss or two just simply because it takes time to learn how to win in the NFL, and we've seen rookies make mistakes, and it's cost the team in the past. So that kind of stuff happens. Those are the things that you kind of give up in order to get a younger talent that's also on a very manageable salary structure. So, and we're not obviously talking about Oren Burks' salary because it's not a factor in the cap right now, but this is a different type of player that this defense has not had in a very long time. And, I guess I'll say trial by fire. I don't know if that necessarily fits. It's a cliche that came to mind, but Jake Ryan's gone. So Oren Burks is obviously going to get more time. It's kind of like what I said with the quarterbacks. Like, they're going to get their snaps because Rodgers isn't out there. Jake Ryan's not out there. Oren Burks is going to play more. So it's just, you know, what was weird to me was he's wearing Morgan Burnett's old 42, and it's a different body style, and you're used to seeing Burnett kind of do some of those things and, you know, play well in the box. And I former Baylor coach said about him, leads me to believe that Burks is smart. He's going to pick up the game over time. He'll probably, you know, become one of those guys who dedicates himself, studies, learns some technique, learns and watches what he does, what he's not doing right, and will clean it up and fix it pretty quickly. And I think he's going to be a big part of this defense before too long. I'm really excited to see what he can add. But it's about time that there's some speed out there because that's been lacking for such a long time. And if there's one thing for this new era that I was hoping and praying for, it was a different type of player and faster. And they've at least found that.
Certainly at least appears that way. Obviously I'd like to see how he does against some different competition. You know, this week they're not facing Le'Veon Bell with the Steelers, but the Steelers have some nice players. Obviously they're a good offense from year to year. Some of their guys are going to play in this game as well. So that's something I'll be watching for with Oren Burks and just kind of getting him used to, you know, the NFL game. That's kind of what these games are for. It's why I think the preseason is what I call a necessary evil. Do guys like Aaron Rodgers need to play in the games? No. But guys like Oren Burks do. And I think that, you know, they're better for it later in the year because they've gotten the experience early on in the games. So that's that for rookies. I thought you got to be pretty happy with the way those two guys have played, at least early on. Obviously, we'll see if they can build on that going into this week's game against the Steelers. The other guy who looked pretty good was Jamal Williams. He's the starting running back, if you will, for right now. I've been pretty open about how I feel about Jamal Williams. I think he's the least explosive of the three main running backs that I expect them to use this year, meaning Aaron Jones, Ty Montgomery, and Jamal Williams. I think Aaron Jones is the best of those three. I think Ty certainly still has some value as a running back who wears number 88 and pisses off Andy Benoit all the time because how dare he wear that number. But as a player on the field specifically, I mean, he's a big guy. He's special with the ball in his hands. That's just, they need to find a way to get these guys the ball. But Jamal Williams, you know, he caught a pass, and last year he had a guy in front of him. You know, he had him lined up to make the tackle. And last year, I guarantee Jamal Williams would have tried to run that guy over. Instead, he showed some juice. He juked out of the way and got into the end zone. That was nice to see. I think Williams certainly has a role on this team going forward. The chainsaw with legs kind of thing is the way I explain him. He's a pounder. Those ugly games in the rain, the snow, whatever, where it's hard to throw, so you have to run the ball a little bit more. Those are his kinds of games. But ultimately, I still maintain hope. Aaron Jones was back at practice today. He'll obviously be suspended for the first two games of the season due to last season's drug charge. But I remain hopeful that Aaron Jones will be the starter. But it is nice to see, Jason, I think if nothing else, the Packers have, you know, in the past it was always the most recent past, I should say, Eddie Lacy and James Starks. And then after that, not a whole lot. I mean, I can't even tell you some of the names of some of the guys that have come through here as those guys' backups. But now you have at least three running backs, Jones, Williams, and Montgomery, that you feel pretty good about, don't you?
Yeah, we've said it a couple times in the offseason, the few shows that we did. The offensive line is really where we probably spend most of our time talking about what we're concerned about. You know, I mean, the running back position is pretty stacked. I mean, obviously, you know, my roll your eyes caveat, obviously, you know what it is, Jacob. It's one, two words, which are?
If healthy.
If healthy, when healthy. That's the only thing that can derail this thing. I like Jamal Williams. It's funny, Jamal Williams catches the pass in the flat, and he comes in second effort, and he dives forward. And I haven't seen a lot of other teams play. I haven't watched a lot of other preseason games so far. But I literally found myself already thinking, like, you know, don't dive into the end zone or don't ram your way into the end zone and have it called back because you lowered your head and you initiated the contact as a running back. You know, that's just kind of the way I look at these new rules and how they might affect the game. But, you know, if that's my biggest concern, then I think we're in good shape. Williams looks great. I heard he's in really good shape. I heard he's like bulked. Ty Montgomery, you know, I'm really hoping that with Philbin coming back, that they can carve out a nice role for him this year that doesn't involve him touching the ball 15 times a game as a runner. I just don't think that he's got the durability to do that, but he's got a lot to offer this offense. And they've got to find a way to get him on the field the same time as they do Cobb and some of these other guys where it's like, you know, the defense has to pick their poison. That's what I want is the mismatch. The running back position is going to really help that a lot. And then in pass pro, you know, that's the other thing I'm going to be hoping for is that Jones and Jamal Williams both progress and grow as pass protectors in year two. That's something that young backs don't typically tend to do a lot of or do well. Some of them do, but it's hard to do. It's hard to transition into that because there's just not a ton of that they're asked to do at the college level. But running back's in great shape. You know, the team's getting healthy. A lot of guys came back to practice today, including Aaron Jones. The arrow's pointing up at the running back position, and all these things are kind of coming together at the right time to where if this Packers team stays healthy this year, they could really do some very important things. But on offense, obviously, they need all cylinders go.
Absolutely, and I think it's Peter Bukowski who's pointed out the way that the Patriots used to use Deion Lewis. You could almost tell they had a specific touch number a game for him, and it was like 15 or something close to that. Doing that for Ty Montgomery, I think, could be beneficial for him. Keeps him fresh. And obviously, he's a dynamic weapon. I mean, we've seen that before. He certainly showed some juice as a wide receiver when he was a receiver his rookie season before he got hurt. And then after that, as a running back that second season and last year, they just never really got going as a running game. He had a couple good games in the passing game, especially specifically against Atlanta, where he was maybe the most used player in the NFL going into that. That's something that – if there's something I think that Mike McCarthy and the Packers offensive staff, I'm hopeful that they've learned, is to rotate some of those guys in and out. Yeah, Jamal Williams can play. Does he need to play – every series or every play on the series, you know, something with this Packers no huddle offense that they've gone to in recent years is the same players are on the field all the time. And that's all well and good. But rotating some guys in and out, especially at the running back position, because they have three guys with three very unique, different skill sets that they can use. And I think keeping two of them on the bench for the majority of games would be a disservice to those guys. But overall, running back looks pretty good. With the good, obviously, comes the bad. I think the backup offensive tackle situation is less than positive. Kyle Murphy played left tackle. He was okay. I think he can play on the right side. The left side, you're asking for trouble. Byron Bell was horrendous. And Jason Spriggs, he started over Jason Spriggs, which is kind of a mystery to everybody. Jason Spriggs has even said he's not sure what the hell happened there. Nobody seems to know why the Packers ended up going with Bell over Spriggs as the starter. And quite frankly, I think it's a waste of reps. They need to know if Jason Spriggs can block quality players because he's the more talented player of the two. I think it's been shown in this league that Byron Bell cannot play offensive tackle. Adrian Claiborne may have single-handedly made a Pro Bowl last season from his performance against the Cowboys where Byron Bell played left tackle. It's not pretty. He can play guard. He's okay. He's serviceable there. But he certainly can't play tackle. I think that was shown. There was a play. Hundley, it was a three-step drop. Hundley hit Davante Adams on a comeback route. And Hundley almost got killed. Now, to almost get your quarterback killed on a three-step drop, that's an impressive level of bad. Like, I mean, you just have to almost completely whiff on your man that you're blocking in order for that. So Byron Bell can't play tackle for this team. I'm hopeful that he can't. The backup tackle situation is something to keep an eye on. You're hoping that Bulaga and Bakhtiari can stay healthy. They have two very good starting tackles. Their backup tackle, it looks like. I still think the most talented guy for both sides is Jason Spriggs, but he's got to show something, and he's got to show something fast because it looks like that the coaches are losing some faith in him if they're starting Byron Bell over him in a preseason game. But we'll see how that goes Thursday night. The other, maybe the worst player on the field on Thursday night was Quentin Rollins. He got torched early in coverage and then muffed a punt. And it was just a bad look for him. This is a guy who had a high pedigree as a second round pick. And he just hasn't really ever lived up to it. He had an okay rookie season where you thought, okay, the Packers are in good shape with Randall and Rollins, and it turns out both of them might be gone two seasons after that year. He's coming back from an Achilles injury. He's not that fast to begin with. The Packers need to figure out quickly that this guy's not cornerback. Maybe he can play safety. I don't know. I tend to doubt that as well. But they're trying to find stuff for him to do, and he's not very good. That's the reality of it. When it comes to playing the cornerback spot, at least he's not very good at it. I mentioned the Jamon Moore drops earlier. That was probably the other big downside of those games. He's struggling to catch the football, and that's spilling over from practice into games and now back into practice. He had a couple drops, and he seems to be fighting the football to catch it again today from what even I was able to see. Jason, those are the three rough things I saw. Any commentary on those or anything else that maybe I missed?
So as far as Bell goes, I'll tell you what I think it comes down to as far as why he got the start over Spriggs. It's T-R-U-S-T, trust. And I think that was what Mike McCarthy might have been expressing, was I trust the seasoned vet and to see what he's got, because maybe, you know, I don't know what the update is on Bulaga. I know that he's practicing and he's activated and he's shocking everybody with his timeline recovery from the ACL, but he might not – quite be ready. I mean, the Packers need to know how much they need to rush him back and how much they need to push him to try to play right away. If Byron Bell goes out and stonewalls everybody and looks good at tackle, then they've got yet another solution and they've got something to go off of. I think they already know what Jason Spriggs is and is not. And so I don't think that he's ever going to really develop into anything great. He put on some weight, and he's going to have to learn how to play in that new frame. So I don't know if that's going to equate to anything over time, if he can improve. But this is year three, and he hasn't really shown us anything to go off of. So as far as the offensive line, now we're starting to get into the topics where there is some concern kind of for these areas of the team. And then Quentin Rollins, I mean, you know, he's probably one of the most intriguing guys in all of the preseason and all of camp, because you can see them keeping him because he knows the defense and he can play special teams and some of those things that you need a player for, but he hasn't done anything that's impressed at all. I mean, he didn't muff the punt. He did field the punt cleanly, but it's the second that the tackler came and hit the ball squarely with his helmet on the ball came loose on the punt recovery. So, you know, a muff is a little bit different in terms of that it's, you know, you drop the ball and you don't secure the ball. He did that. He lost it upon contact. And then he fielded a punt later in the game inside the 10-yard line, although that ball was probably going to land near the sideline and potentially roll out and pin them at the one. So I don't know if that was a good decision or not. I'm not enough of a special teams guru to know whether that was a smart decision. I know that we banged our head on a wall last year with Trevor Davis and some of his poor decision-making back there. So, I mean, they're doing everything they can to try to keep Rollins. They invested a lot of draft capital in him as a second-rounder several years ago. He's still here. Demaryius Randall's not. Randall was picked ahead of him in the first round. So I'd love for him to be able to be some depth at safety. I wouldn't mind him staying on as that. I'm seeing too much of him, and I've heard too much about him already. That makes me think that they're going to overplay him. And that's what I worry about with Mike McCarthy, is he tends to kind of go with these guys that he trusts and that have earned their opportunities and they're veterans. And, you know, it's the old stubborn McCarthy crap, you know, for lack of a better term. And I think that's one of the reasons why maybe Bell did start over Spriggs. He's just got this idea in his head that, well, Bell's going to start because he's, you know, we got to see what we have in him, or there's politics going on, or there's other things that are driving that decision. So, I mean, fortunately, there weren't a ton of things that looked absolutely ugly other than Rollins. And, you know, Bell wasn't great. You kind of joked about the three-step drop. I mean, that is, you know, I rarely will sit there and say I can do better than a pro. And, I mean, I am no offensive lineman by any stretch of the imagination. But protection on a three-step drop, I would imagine, at a minimum, would just consist of just standing in the way. And if you can at least do that, then your quarterback shouldn't be already running for his life. But again, you know, NFL stunts and different things, and, you know, the pressure doesn't always come straight at you. So I get that. Jamon Moore, I don't worry about. I think he'll be fine. I think he admitted his head is swimming right now with all the stuff that he's trying to take in, and he wants to go out there and prove that he's worth where they drafted him, that he can be a starter, that he can get some reps. Because, you know, these guys have to know there's a spot out there for them to play right away and to start making a name for themselves and do really, really well. So, you know, he gets in his head a little bit. What happens with the drops? We've seen other Packers receivers come in as youngsters and have problems with that and turn it around. James Jones is my favorite example. Turned out to be a fantastic receiver. He was never all world, but put up some pretty impressive numbers in his time in a Packers uniform. So I think Jamon Moore, he'll be fine. I think he'll be plenty fine. I'm not, you know, I haven't seen enough to start worrying about him. But fortunately, that's where kind of the bad ends. And there was a practice that went on today, Jake, and you were there for a little bit. So what was cool about that, and I'll turn it back over to you, obviously, is that there were a lot more guys to pay attention to today. A lot of guys got coming back from injury.
Yeah, there were. The Packers are probably as healthy as they've ever been since training camp started. Guys that came back today, you know, Kevin King, Aaron Jones, David Bakhtiari, Randall Cobb, Mike Daniels, Jair Alexander, Jimmy Graham, Mo Wilkerson, and I will tell you, those three, well, Jimmy Graham, Mo Wilkerson,
and Mercedes Lewis. Oh, my goodness. They are huge individuals. That's not exactly the biggest amount of analysis that you're ever going to get out of me, but my goodness, they're just large. Like, I mean, obviously they look big on TV and everything like that, but there's just something different that you get when you're there, close to them, up close. Yeah, they had a lot of guys ready and available today, so that was nice to see. I don't know how much of that's going to translate over to Thursday night, obviously. Rodgers was taking reps with the first team, which usually would lead some to believe maybe he's going to play a little bit, series or two. Last year, I believe he played one series in the second preseason game, and then he played two series against Denver the following year. But that might be a little different because Brian Bulaga didn't play in that game, and they wanted to keep him in bubble wrap, if you will, for the regular season. So that was interesting to see. As far as like the view and everything like that, my view was actually pretty poor. They were doing all the team stuff on the other side of things. The punt return stuff today, I was paying attention to that specifically because, Jason, we mentioned Quentin Rollins. I don't want to just bag on the guy, but I have no idea why he's even returning punts. Like, even his skill set doesn't lend you to believe he can be a punt returner. Like, he's not a quick twitch athlete with that breakaway speed. You know, the reality for the situation is this team's best punt returner is Trevor Davis. And I still think that that's a pretty good thing. I think he's a good returner when he's not making bad decisions, if that makes sense. So if he can clean up his decision-making on when to field punts and such, I think that he's the best returner on the team. But he's got to get on the field because, you know, the old adage of can't make the club in the tub kind of thing, that might apply to Trevor Davis because, you know, the Packers have a lot of wide receivers that could make this roster. And they're all making plays. And that doesn't just mean the drafted guys like Jamon Moore and Equanimeous St. Brown. It's undrafted guys or free agents they brought in like Jake Kumerow. D'Angelo Yancey's made plays. I mean, Trevor Davis has to get back on the field. But really, the Packers with experience returning punts are Randall Cobb and Tremont Williams, both of which returned punts here in Green Bay, obviously. Williams during his first stint with the team. You probably don't want one of your top corners and your number two wide receiver returning punts. So, Jason, is there anyone on this team that can return punts?
I have no idea. I mean, the only thing I can hope for is that the punt turns into what it was a lot of last year, which is a lot of fair catching and just kind of securing the ball. And, you know, I mean, even when they had Micah Hyde back there, it wasn't often that he was going to do anything flashy with the ball, although he did have a couple scores on returns, but he was very secure with the football. So I guess that's the first step. I don't want to see Cobb back there. I don't want to see Tremont Williams back there. I want somebody who can maybe do something with it. I just don't know. I don't know why it's so difficult for them to do the basic, which is secure the ball first. So I don't know. I'd like to think this is a training camp or preseason bug and it'll get fixed, but you kind of see a lot of these things translate from the preseason into the regular season and it just becomes this thing. I don't want the headline of this season for the Packers on the negative side to be the fact that they couldn't figure out the punt return situation. That's that much I can tell you. I don't want that to be the thing that we're talking about 5 months, 6 months from now when we're talking about the playoffs and things that have befuddled the Packers and the punt return situation is still one of them. So hopefully not. Hopefully it's somebody steps up. I mean, I thought Alexander was going to kind of be that guy. And as a rookie, you know, you don't want him to be overloaded as a young guy. You know, you want him to be able to kind of grow into his role as a corner because they're going to need him out there. So you don't want his head swimming with all the different things that are going on. But my hope is that he's got the maturity to get a few games under his belt and handle the dual role of maybe returning punts and then also being a corner. I don't know how much that affects his ability to stay conditioned and not get tired. And again, a lot of punts end up in fair catches anyway, so it's not like there's a ton of energy being exerted, but you still got to catch the ball and you still have to make good decisions. I mean, hell, if somebody can just figure out how to remember where they are on the field, that would be fantastic because we have two new coordinators, but the one that's back is Ron Zook. And all that stuff that was happening and the issues that were happening with Trevor Davis happened on his watch. So hopefully they have a chance to get it fixed and somebody will step up and grab this job. It should not be Tremont Williams, Randall Cobb, or Quentin Rollins. Those three right there, either of those three are out there, barring injury or, you know, it's a playoff game and you've got to have your own season guy out there. To me, it's the punt return situation has just turned into a total failure then at that point.
Absolutely. And, you know, that remains to be. We'll see who else gets a crack at returning punts Thursday night. They had Jair Alexander back there today. Jamon Moore was back there today. And both of them fumbled. So not a good start for that. We'll see what happens. Honestly, as long as the punt returner does not field a ball in the end zone, it's a step in the right direction. Now, granted, I say that, you know what, Trevor Davis was pretty explosive with some stuff. So there's some things with him that are certainly some low-hanging fruit in terms of making fun of. But he was a good player back there for the Packers last year. You know, that last drive against Cleveland, a lot of people forget that drive probably doesn't happen without Davis's return. The game-tying touchdown pass to Devontae Adams, that is. Davis had a big return on that possession. He's shown some flashes, and he's fast. So we'll see. He's got to get back on the field, because if he's not back on the field, then I have a sneaking suspicion he might have this hamstring injury turn into an injured reserve situation so they can keep him around for next year's camp. But got to get on the field if he's going to be on the team this year. So something to keep an eye on going forward. They play the Steelers Thursday night. It's the second preseason game. It's possible Rodgers plays. Jason, just real quick, what are a couple things you're looking for Thursday night?
Well, the biggest is just the receivers to put together a second game of good showing. If MBS puts together another good game, then that's something. Now it's something to really keep an eye on. Maybe he's a player, and he's got more to offer than we thought. I'd like to see Jamon Moore make a couple catches. Some of the things that didn't go well last week get fixed this week, make adjustments. If Bell can show better, although the team needs to put him in a position to succeed, and I saw on the timeline many saying that he's not a tackle, he's a guard, and so they got to get that whole thing figured out. I just don't know. I don't really know if there's a ton that I'm too concerned about. I mean, even thinking about special teams and like J.K. Scott, he kicked okay. I think he'll be fine. He's doing well in practice. Crosby is Crosby. Rodgers, if he plays, might take the first couple snaps, and then we're all going to be hoping and praying that he puts the ball cap on quickly. So, to me, it's the rookies. I just want to see the rookies continue to improve and clean up and maybe make some more plays, see some guys step up and make it interesting and make a competition out of it. Outside of that, just stay healthy. That's the biggest thing for me, because they still got two more preseason games after this to get going to be on the road. So the whole travel factor and all that, this is the last home preseason game. They won't be back at home until opening day. So just stay healthy.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I think that's the biggest goal. Honestly, no matter what happens, as long as your main guns stay healthy, then you win your preseason game regardless of the final score on that. And I think we've noticed, you know, ever since the Jordy Nelson incident in Pittsburgh a couple years ago, I think we know that all too well, quite honestly. I'm looking for the defensive backs. You know, Kevin King didn't play this past week. Tremont Williams didn't play that last week. And let's see, who was the other one? Oh, Jair Alexander, duh. He didn't play last week either. So I'm looking to see some of those guys play. Alexander King specifically. I know Tremont Williams can play. I know he's a professional. And Jason, you mentioned last week, he's going to make a play that changes the game this year. I absolutely believe that as well. His veteran savvy, I think that's going to be a big deal in this year's secondary. And, oh, yeah, he can still play. But I want to see Josh Jackson put together another game. I want to see Alexander and King, see if those guys have gotten better from practice into the game as well. So that's really what I'm looking for as far as that goes. I wouldn't mind seeing a couple splash plays from an edge guy not named Clay Matthews. So Reggie Gilbert, Kyler Fackrell, Vince Beagle, Kendall Donerson, whoever it may be. Certainly wouldn't mind seeing that either. Which leads me to the next point, Jason. The biggest news of the day is, I guess, it's kind of news. I mean, the Odd Sharks seem to know more than we think they do. And today there was a tweet that surfaced that said, team that Khalil Mack is on by October, and the Packers are the favorite. They are plus 300. which according to my gambling sharks means about 25% chance. So it's, I mean, it's not a 90%. This is far from a slam dunk, so to speak, to this group that he plays for the Packers by October than the Oakland Raiders, which is the team he's currently on. Now, Khalil Mack in the final year of his rookie deal, looking for an extension, and he would be, it would cost a pretty penny to bring him to Green Bay in terms of both draft capital and contract extension. You'd have to make him the highest paid defensive player in the history of the NFL, all when you're about to make your quarterback the highest paid offensive player in the history of the NFL. Me, personally, there's been some debate as to whether or not, you know, what would you do? Who would you give up? What would you give up for this? The Packers have two first-round picks. I would give both of those up without blinking. I would pay Khalil Mack. Khalil Mack is one of the 10 best defensive players in football. The Packers happen to need a pass rusher. Khalil Mack is one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. I would pay him without blinking. I wouldn't say that this is an absolute, the Packers absolutely have to do this or they won't win this year, because I think that, and everybody has this idea of all in, quote unquote, and what that means. You know, you watch teams that spend big in both football and other sports, and they say they're all in to win a championship. You know, the Rams are a team like that. And the Rams may very well win a championship this year. That's certainly possible. But I don't know that the Packers have to do this in order to win. Like, I think there are scenarios where they don't have Khalil Mack and win. But when you can get one of the best players in football, you do it. I mean, the salary cap and all that stuff, my understanding is it would work from under the cap. The Packers have plenty of cap space. Randall Cobb, Clay Matthews, those guys come off the books at the end of this year. And they have money already committed to Rodgers. It's possible that an extension would open up more money in this case for next year. I don't think it's even a question. You trade for Khalil Mack. I would trade both first-round picks. If you don't have to, then obviously that's a bonus. But I absolutely would trade both of those first-round picks. I would give the biggest contract in the history of the sport for a defensive player to Khalil Mack, and I would give him number 55 or whatever jersey number he decides he wants until, if Clay's not around next year, then he can have his old number 52 back. But I would absolutely get Khalil, whatever I got to do to get Khalil Mack in Green Bay. That you want to talk about, Jason, we've talked about dogs or difference makers or whatever phrase you want to use. Khalil Mack is that guy. With all due respect to Nick Perry, Nick Perry is a very good player. Khalil Mack is a great player. Clay Matthews was a great player in the Packers' Super Bowl run. He was a difference maker. Charles Woodson was a player like that. They haven't had a guy like that in quite some time, and they have to get a guy like that, I think. If you have a chance to acquire a player of that caliber, you absolutely do it. And I don't give a damn what the salary cap. You know, people, I think, worry too much about value and cap space and all these other buzzwords that, you know, should we do this? Is it financially prudent or anything like that? Man, you have a chance to get Khalil Mack. You know, if Von Miller was available or something like that, that's the kind of player that Khalil Mack is. You absolutely have to leave no stone unturned. Damn the first-round picks. I'll wait till Friday night to watch the draft. I don't even care about all that shit. If you can get Khalil Mack in here, pay him. You want to talk about having the best offensive player in the league, Aaron Rodgers, for the next 4 years, and one of the best defensive players in the league locked up for the next 4 or 5 years? Do it. No questions asked. Should we be bringing the Mack Daddy to Green Bay, Wisconsin?
Yeah, of course we should. That's why I can tell you're getting amped up with it, just, you know, the difference in tone and word choice, and it's justified. This is a transformational opportunity that a first-year GM, Brian Gutekunst, has to – I mean, nobody's Reggie White, so let's just stop with the comparison. But it's along the lines of something that could really be looked at as a huge turning point for this team. This could actually be the difference, because Mack has not had injury problems. He's durable and he plays. It's kind of like Julius Peppers. Like, you know, Peppers was past his prime and wasn't able to offer what Mack offers, but the guy was always available on Sunday. He was always available to play. So this could be the difference between getting one more Super Bowl and maybe a second. You know, I mean, he's obviously one guy on defense. He can't do it by himself. But what he would allow the defense to do, what he would allow Mike Pettine to do, you know, how many additional stops does the Packers defense get on third down? how many more times do they get off the field after, you know, another three and out instead of a longer drive and the offense gets the ball? I mean, you want to put the ball in Aaron Rodgers' hands two or three more times a game? I do. So get out there and do it. I mean, you talked about the salary cap and all that other stuff. Listen, there's teams out there that are making moves that have way less wiggle room than the Packers, and they're doing it. The Eagles were over the cap. Might still be, as far as I know. They have to get under it by the time the season starts, but you do what's available to you. It's interesting to me that a legitimate gambling or betting site is putting this out there because they're only going to want to try to move money in the best way possible for themselves. You know, it's like I know that the odds out there in a game aren't necessarily about a team winning or losing. It's about handicapping it so you can get enough money coming on both sides to pay the house. But they also have to kind of know what they're talking about. So maybe it's the relationship between the Packers and the Raiders because of the fact that Reggie McKenzie came from Green Bay and he and Brian Gutekunst are friends and they're, you know, they have a good rapport back and forth. You got to pull the trigger. You got to make this thing happen. I don't know what is the holdup. It might just be that Oakland is asking too much right now. And I do think there's a limit. I do think that you don't have to necessarily go crazy. I also have not decided whether I'm in the camp of that they have to give up both first round picks. You know, I don't necessarily know if I want that because that's a lot. Well, that's a lot to give up, although you're getting a player who's definitely worth a first-round pick, you know, without having to question it versus taking one and having that guy fade out like a Demarius Randle or somebody else. So I get that. I understand the equation and the value chart there, but pull the damn trigger. Just get this thing done already. I mean, and I don't know if the Raiders are going to make it easy for anybody to make it happen this soon because it would only help the Packers to get him in and get him into camp and get him up to speed before the first week of the season so that he's fully ready to go. But this is Khalil freaking Mack. Like, the guy could come in week two or week three and he's going to tear things up and he's going to absolutely terrorize the rest of this division. I will say this. If he does end up getting traded and he doesn't come to Green Bay, if he ends up in the NFC North, I will dislodge my toilet from the ground with my bare hands and throw it out the window and I'm on the second story. So, and I will Facebook Live a video of it. So I'll just say, like, you know, I'll add to your, you know, to your word choice, I will throw in my own word choice. Brian Gutekunst, cut the shit. Make it happen. Get it done. It's Mac Daddy time.
I'm obviously rooting for Khalil Mack to be a Green Bay Packer if he were to be traded, but that makes me at least sort of root for that scenario just because I would like to see that. Let me also say this because there's some skepticism, obviously, because it's like, oh, it's a betting, you know, it's not like Adam Schefter tweeted it, which makes people more likely to trust it. They go, oh, it's a betting website. Like, what do they know? I'm like, well, for example, the betting favorite to land LeBron James this offseason was the Los Angeles Lakers. Okay, LeBron plays for the Lakers. A few off seasons ago, the betting favorite to land Kevin Durant was the Golden State Warriors, and everybody just dismissed it. And I was like, I'm not surprised at all that he ended up in Golden State. Like, I thought maybe he would go back to Oklahoma City, but he ended up at Golden State. Like, these people, they know things. I don't know how they know, but they know things. So, now, I'm not saying that Khalil Mack is a slam dunk to be a Green Bay Packer, by no stretch of the imagination. But this isn't just some pie in the sky, pull it out of my ass kind of fan favorite thing. There's some legs to it. How many legs? We'll find out over the next couple days here. Just to think about real quick what this would look like. For those of you who are like, oh, I don't know, you know, should the Packers do this? Okay, let's just say they have a nickel defense on the field on third down in the Super Bowl against Tom Brady, and they're going to go after, as presently constructed right now, Clay Matthews, Mike Daniels, Muhammad Wilkerson, and Nick Perry. That's not bad. But what if you did, instead of that, replace Clay Matthews with Khalil Mack and then move – you could either bump Perry inside. You could have Matthews play the middle and run a stunt with some of those interior defensive linemen. Listen, I watched the Philadelphia Eagles last year rotate pass rushers in and out. Chris Long would come in and just destroy people on third down. I think Khalil Mack coming to Green Bay, for example –
would extend Clay Matthews' career as a pass rusher, because you can just say, okay, it's third down. You go to the edge and kill people. You want your inside linebacker to take up running downs? Clay's that guy. He's athletic enough to do that. I think it makes the entire – obviously, adding a guy like Khalil Mack makes your entire defense better. But instead of your third edge rusher having to be Reggie Gilbert, and bless Reggie Gilbert's heart, he's been a good player in camp. He had a good showing in preseason. If Clay Matthews is your third edge, you're in better shape than if it's Reggie Gilbert. And you can rotate those guys in and out more, because Matthews can still play the edge for series at a time. And you can play him out there with Reggie Gilbert or Vince Beagle or Kyler Fackrell if they happen to find something out of him as well. It just makes the whole defense better. I don't see, if you're a Packers fan, how you can be against this. I mean, they've done – that would mean in an offseason, one offseason, Brian Gutekunst will have added Jaire Alexander and Josh Jackson, two guys that were both widely regarded to be first-round picks, and he added both of them. Muhammad Wilkerson, who could be a really good kind of player. I don't think he's getting a lot of publicity, but he's played for Patton before and was awesome under Mike Patton previously. That's a possibility that could be something that really pans out really well. Jimmy Graham was added this offseason. And then you add in Khalil Mack for essentially Marcus Davenport, who was picked by the Saints, and a first-round pick, like your own first-round pick. And let's be honest, Jason, if we were doing our preseason show today, we both probably like the Packers and the Saints to be playoff contenders. So it's not like the Packers are giving up two top 10 picks or anything like that. You're looking at two picks that are, if the season goes the way you want it to be, the Saints are picking in the 20 somewhere and the Packers are picking 32nd. That's a lot to give up. I get it. But the guy's worth it. I mean, he just is. You know, that's a difference-making player. That's something where if it is on the table, you got to go get it. Jason, any more thoughts on this real quick on anything I just said?
Cut the shit. Get it done. Bring the Mac Daddy to Green Bay. Have a great week, everybody. Enjoy the Pittsburgh game.
There you have it. And I have said I will name my firstborn son or daughter Brian. Not Brianna, not a girl's version of the name, quote unquote, Brian. They will be named Brian. And if I really have to, Brian, Mr. Gutekunst, I will name him Goody. If that's what I have to do, I don't even care. So that is the official movement of Twitter, is bring the Mac Daddy to Green Bay. Thank you guys for coming back for today's show. Enjoy the Pittsburgh game. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. You can follow the show on Twitter. It's at PackerPulse. You can follow me personally. I am at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He is at Jason Perrone. One other thing from Cheesehead TV that I'm involved with, please follow and subscribe to Pack-A-Day Podcast. You'll hear me about every 2 weeks with my partner Nick Schmitz and a lot of other talented guys, Ross Uglum, Zach Jacobson, Andy Herman, plenty of guys. Andy Herman's the godfather behind this thing. It's been really fun for the last – I listen every morning. Jason, I don't know if you've listened in or not yet, but there's a lot of good content, and it's a lot of different perspectives, which is something that's fun. It's 365 days a year, so Christmas Day, Easter Sunday. The only thing that'll stop that show from airing is Jesus Christ himself returning to Earth. So we'll see when that happens. But until then, there will be a show like that every single day. Want to thank our sponsor. That's TicketKing.com. I just passed the thing today, the building today. They have tickets for Thursday night's game. Check them out. They have tickets for all the regular season games. If you are going to the 49ers game, that is who I'm purchasing my tickets through. Stop by, come say hello to the new Westendorf family. Mr. and Mrs. Westendorf will be there that night. So grab your tickets. Walk down the street. Let's watch the Packers kick the 49ers' ass that night. Grab your stuff there. Want to thank you guys for listening in. Thursday night, Packers-Steelers, Lambeau Field. It's the last time they will be at Lambeau Field until 4 weeks from today when they take on the Chicago Bears. All kinds of stuff in there. Bring the Mac Daddy to Green Bay. Close me out. Jason, thank you for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the PAX Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.